Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hello and welcome into Brewcast from Mesa Brew on the SB Nation Podcast Network. Luke Giardi joined by Trevor Woods, and we are here with you on Halloween night, Monday, October 31st, as we head into Tuesday, November 1st, and the final month of the college football regular season. Cannot believe we are hitting the home stretch here. It goes by so fast each and every year, Trevor, but good to be with you here tonight. Again, man, and a lot to get to, obviously. How are you?
Doing well, man. Been a crazy weekend. Was up till like 6 a.m. Sunday morning after the Michigan State Michigan night game and all the madness that followed, but looking forward to talking to you about all things that happened during the game and the extracurriculars after.
Yeah, man, I know you and I talked about it. We don't want to spend a whole lot of time or a bunch of this podcast talking about that because we know pretty much everyone's doing that. Everyone's talking about the tunnel incident. We'll touch on it a little bit here, obviously, but we're not going to spend a lot of time on it because, well, everyone is, and quite honestly, it's a little bit exhausting at this point. Anyone, you know, pretty much my thoughts are anyone making any sort of excuses whatsoever, whether it's the one tunnel thing or the fact that, you know, McBurrow's and Jamon Green were, I don't know, skipping or something. We saw McBurrow skipping a little bit into the tunnel, and then he just started walking normally. There's no camera feed to what happened prior to that. There are reports that one of the players, that Jamon Green, was attacked. We did see that with a couple Michigan State players and getting hit with a helmet. And then the reports that Jaden McBurrow's tried to step in and then he got, assaulted by a couple of different Michigan State players. At this point, we're going to let the, I'm guessing the authorities handle the situation. Michigan State has announced four suspensions. I'd imagine more on the way after the footage from the ESPN ABC cameras. Ultimately, bad display, a real shame, a very dark moment in this, rivalry. And yeah, I mean, what more can you say about it that hasn't been said? It was bad behavior. It absolutely cannot happen. Michigan's just got to move on. You get the win. You got Paul back, and you've got Rutgers coming up here this week, and everything else is going to be taken care of by the administrators and the authorities.
Exactly, and that's what Jim Harbaugh actually told Brad Galley a little bit ago. Brad always posts his video on Twitter of his conversations with Jim and the Glick Fieldhouse. And Harbaugh was saying that this is unprecedented, what happened, the tunnel assault, and that the players are still reeling from it from a mental perspective. Of course, Jamon Green and Jaden McBurrow first and foremost, but the whole team collectively, they are feeling what we're all feeling, quite frankly. Anybody, Michigan fan or not, who has witnessed the videos should be disturbed by it. And if you're not, that kind of is a reflection of your character. If you view these videos and don't have a problem, don't take issue with seeing 10 guys gang up on another and physically assault somebody else, there's an issue with you mentally. And we're seeing it on certain radio stations, certain radio broadcasts in the Michigan State sphere, trying to spin it and trying to blame Jim Harbaugh, even Michigan State's rivals site. And this is very disturbing. We see this type of stuff in politics as well. And this is an area where we should all come together and call balls and strikes for what they are. There should be no spin on this. This type of behavior should be condemned. Mel Tucker today, he apologized to Michigan publicly. He hasn't talked to Jim Harbaugh. Mel Tucker, he suspended four players. More players will be suspended. Players will probably be prosecuted, and some will be arrested. And that's the bottom line. And there's been no indication that these Michigan players said anything to deserve what happened to them. And even if words are spoken, this soul sticks and stones may break your bones thing, well, there's still no justification for the heinous videos that we've seen in that tunnel. So, yeah, we might not be dwelling on this more than a few more minutes, but certainly disturbing.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned some of the stuff you're going to hear. Heard a couple of losers down in Detroit today try and blame this incident on Jim Harbaugh. This is one of those moments where you got to kind of pick and choose who you decide that you want, whose opinions you want to take seriously on the matter. And I've got mine, who's people I respect, and opinions that matter and opinions that don't. And if we're a couple opinions that matter to you, we really appreciate you being here on the show here tonight. So not going to waste any more time on the tunnel incident, because that seemingly is taken away from what transpired out there on the field. And that's the fact that Michigan State did show way more fight in that tunnel than they did out on the football field. It was an absolute drubbing by Michigan of Michigan State. Though, I will say, you know, the first quarter didn't go exactly as planned. Michigan State was leading 7-3 at the end of the first quarter, but Michigan, the tried and true game plan, man, they just wear down their opponents. Second half adjustments, particularly on the defensive side and from Jesse Minter, have been nothing short of outstanding here this year. It was two completely different halves for Michigan on the defensive side of the football. There were what we saw in the first half, probably some paths to victory for Michigan State had things continued and adjustments not been made, in particularly Peyton Thorne just letting Keon Coleman go up and make plays, because he was outstanding in the first half. But Michigan made the proper adjustments and shut down that MSU offense entirely in the second half. And then, of course, the run game. Once again, Michigan's run game is second to none in the country, to be quite honest with you. You know, they were amazing. Blake Corum, what more can be said about, you know, his ability? And you take a look at Michigan, you know, rushing for the 276 yards, 5.3 yards per rush. And I love the fact that Michigan got 2.4, this is according to Bill Connolly's box score, 2.4 yards before contact, and then 3 yards after contact. And that's what Blake Corum is able to do. It's the yards after contact. His ability to stay on his feet, running through arm tackles, dragging defenders with him, getting those extra yards that result in first downs. And Michigan, I understand we'll get into the red zone inefficiencies here a little bit, but about 3 points per drive with the number of drives that they had. They had 10 drives. I mean, it's going to work out in your favor quite a bit at the time.
Exactly. Let's start with Corum, and we need to all put the notion to bed that he can't succeed in short yarded situations. Corum is increasingly reminding me of one of Jim Harbaugh's most favorite players of all time, a guy he coached in Frank Gore, who's one of the best running backs in NFL history. And Gore, also a small guy. I believe he might have been around 5'8", 5'9", just like Corum. But Corum has such a good small center of gravity that Corum can get so low to the ground that it looks like he's flying an inch from the ground like Superman to pick up 3 or 4 extra yards. And Corum's very physical too, pound for pound, perhaps the toughest guy on the Michigan team. And not only is Corum tough and doesn't go down when his ankles are contacted, he can razzle dazzle and juke the hell out of defenders. So that was great to see once again. Clearly a Heisman candidate. He'll be in New York City, I think, no matter what at this point. It's certainly trending that direction. And, yeah, the Michigan defense, once again, absolutely lights out in the second half. Been a continuous thread the past month now. The third quarter, talk about coming out of that locker room. Only gave up 8 total yards in the third quarter and might have gave up just a hair more in the fourth quarter, but that wasn't a whole lot, 55 yards. So incredible, incredible performance in a rivalry game down the stretch. Michigan State came out swinging, you could say, even defensively. They were hitting hard, and they were hitting hard throughout the game when they were able to make a tackle, but from an execution down-to-down standpoint, Michigan is the one who thoroughly dominated.
Yeah, no question about it. And, you know, using the same formula, that there were some questions whether or not, you know, Michigan State's pass defense is obviously one that you can go get. We didn't necessarily see a lot of that, though. It's not like J.J. McCarthy had a bad game or anything like that. He was 15 of 25 for 167 yards through a touchdown pass as well. But it was also, you know, I think Michigan State made some adjustments on that side of the football to kind of shore some things up there. And Michigan was able to, you know, to dominate on the ground, not only with Blake Corum, but J.J. McCarthy using his legs as well. Something that I really like to see. There were some big conversions that J.J. was able to pick up with his legs. And ultimately, like, we know the arm talent that J.J. has, you know, and he does. There's still are some issues with maybe some receivers getting some separation, maybe J.J. locking in on some tight ends and things like that. But ultimately, the upside from J.J. McCarthy, while it does come with his arm, it comes with his legs, right? He's able to use his mobility much more than Cade McNamara, and that's what people have said this entire time, and it really came to fruition in this game against Michigan State. J.J. keeping drives alive, and ultimately, while only 2 drives converted into touchdowns, you kick that many field goals with a guy like Jake Moody, and ultimately, you start squeezing the life out of your opponent, and that's what we saw Saturday night.
Oh, yeah. J.J. already, he's showing that he's a game manager. That's the bottom of his ceiling. He's a game manager every bit as good as Cade McNamara was for the Wolverines. And then we're seeing glimpses of his high ceiling and that potential, that untapped potential, to where you're seeing him instinctually not hesitate and hit it with a run when there's an open lane. That is something he didn't necessarily do at the beginning of the season. JJ's always been a good runner since he's been at Michigan, but JJ admittedly himself, he said he's somebody who has gotten increasingly faster in the past couple of years. And he's just a couple of years out of high school, still just 19 years old. And it's funny, there's some college quarterbacks and 24 years old, still young in life too. But Hendon Hooker, for example, from Tennessee, he's almost as old as, I think he's, might be older than AJ Brown from the Eagles, and Sean Clifford, I think he's like 23 or 24 for Penn State. So I know I'm going off track a little bit here, but really my point is how good JJ already looks in certain facets. And he's just shaking the cobwebs a bit when it comes to accuracy in the intermediate to long area. You can tell he's getting a little amped up and excited, and some balls are sailing on him. But at the same time, there are a couple of drops in the game, one from Colston Loveland. There was another in the end zone, which I thought was an NFL caliber throw, an Aaron Rodgers esque type throw, low down to where it was through defenders. Nobody else could have got it. Luke Schoonmaker probably should have made the catch. Would have been a hard catch, but even an incompletion sometimes can wow you for McCarthy. And then there's a flea flicker in which McCarthy had to roll to his right to evade pressure, threw it like a shortstop, doing a double play, and a hell of a strike down the field. So each and every game, even if it's a game where McCarthy was 15 to 25, 167 yards, and one touchdown, and the 50 yards in the ground rushing, he has a few wow-type plays. And that won't be slowing down. And you talk to – and I've talked to a couple scouts, and they think he's the real deal already. So there's no pump the brakes on his NFL prospects or aspirations. It's just going to take him a little more time, a little more seasoning, but he'll get there, and hopefully he gets there by the time Ohio State rolls around.
And to your point, it's not like J.J. was checking down all game. He did average 8.6 air yards per pass. He was moving it downfield. It's just I think they just need to figure out some things in the passing game, right? It hasn't come along quite yet, and, you know, this was a great opportunity to maybe see some of that, but ultimately you go out there and this team has beaten you the last 2 years, and you're trying your best to put yourself in position to win a Big Ten championship and go to the college football playoff, you don't take any chances with it. You know what I'm saying? So if running the football is the way you get there and using the play action, and that's exactly what Michigan was able to do, unfortunately not really able to punch it into the end zone, which we would like to see them more. You and I talked about this a little last week, just kind of looking at their success rate here. On the game, Michigan had a 48.7% success rate, so 48.7 of their plays graded out successfully, which is, I mean, it's half your plays. It's a huge number, but only 25% in the red zone. Only scored, you know, in 40% of their red zone trips, 50% of goal-to-go touchdown percentage. It needs to be better if you're Michigan. It didn't need to be better here in this game. We would have liked to see a couple of finished drives. Some of the play calling, though, right, is kind of an issue. Michigan, there's a third and goal from about the 10 or 11, threw it to the 5-yard line short of the sticks. Only one route went into the end zone. We saw that earlier this year in some games as well, and there seemingly is a hesitancy to throw the ball in the end zone. You got the guy. You got JJ. He's got the arm talent to fit it into some tight windows. And quite honestly, you mentioned the throw to Schoonmaker, which was fantastic, but I also think he had Ronnie Bell wide open just to the left of him. So I'm still wondering if JJ's locking in on some targets pre-snap and things like that. Some things you've got to clear up, but we are getting into November. As you're listening to this podcast, it is the last month of the season. Things certainly need to get, you know, cleared up, but I'd imagine in games where they feel they need to score more, the red zone play calling is probably going to be a little more aggressive.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I agree, and Jim Harbaugh today, even he wasn't shying away from the fact that they need to score touchdowns in the red zone. That's what they aspire to do, and that they're going to get it cleaned up. So this isn't like years past. Sometimes Harbaugh will say that he, you know, field goals are cool and points per drive matters and all that. 5 for 5 sometimes with field goals is unacceptable. Sometimes 5 for 5 with field goals will lose you the game or put you in a predicament where you can lose the game. For example, last season against Nebraska on the road in Lincoln, Jake Moody was 4 for 4 on field goals, and Michigan narrowly won that game, escaped on a plane back to Ann Arbor with a win. But yeah, at some point in time, that will end up shooting yourself in the foot with that. So aggression, locking in on who they feel can be the major catalyst in the red zone. That's also important. Something that Harbaugh said today, not necessarily about the red zone, but he was talking how he wants to get Andrel Anthony more involved.
I wanted to touch on this. Thank God, man. Please, yeah. Please. Yeah.
So Harbaugh was saying he wants to get him more involved and believes he will start getting more catches. So Andrel, he may be one of Michigan's fastest players. And when all things are all said and done, not necessarily this season, but in a year or two, he could be one of Michigan's most electric receivers in quite some time. Him and J.J. McCarthy have a very good rapport and friendship chemistry. I believe that matters too. So I think it's just only a matter of time. It's not a matter if, it's a matter when. And I believe the time is sooner than later. And we saw it last season in the red zone against Michigan State. J.J. one hell of a play in East Lansing, a touchdown to Andrel. They just have such a natural chemistry that they know what the other's doing, their tendencies, right? And J.J. kind of knows where he is going to go, and Andrel knows where to go for J.J. and when the ball is going to be coming. So I think down the stretch, he could be a secret weapon for the Wolverines. Luke Schoonmaker, he's had a good season. I would like to see him be utilized a bit more in the red zone. And well, he was, and he dropped the ball, but I think down the stretch, we'll see more conversions from Schoonmaker in the red zone. And Donovan Edwards too, a really good pass catcher. Pass catchers at running back can be lethal sometimes. So it isn't like Michigan doesn't have weapons on the offensive side of the ball. And it isn't like they can't use them in the red zone in the passing game. Now, I guess I should throw it back to you because you certainly had some things to say about Andrel.
Well, no, I think you touched on it perfectly. I just wanted to ask your opinions pretty much. Why isn't Andrel getting more involved, right? Especially, and, you know, at the end of the day, Cornelius Johnson didn't have the best game in the world, you know, on Saturday. He looked like he was lacking some confidence out there. He had the fumble early on. He had the bad offsides towards the end of the half. You know, when you see things like that, like work Andrel a little bit in. We saw him, you know, at times be the difference maker in some games. The Iowa game had a couple of big catches against zone. He's really good. He's very instinctual, which is the thing that I don't understand. He's really good. He can beat man coverage with his speed, but he's really good at finding holes in the zone. So I'm not sure. I do wonder if it's maybe a blocking thing, right? If they, because in order to play in this offense with what Michigan does, on the outside, as a receiver, you've got to be an above-average blocker. Like, a lot of their runs are because of how great the receivers are at blocking. I don't know if they're fully confident in his blocking ability to be out there full-time as a receiver. That's the only thing I can think of, Trevor, of why he hasn't seen the field more than he has.
And that may very well may be true. I would have to look at the film a little more of that, but he hasn't been receiving a whole lot of snaps of late to even really identify right. The pros or cons to his blocking abilities, but it should be more of a genuine rotation of these Michigan wideouts at this point until a true leader emerges. Of course, Ronnie Bell is right up there, right? Yeah. But besides that, I think some of these guys should be rotated in and out no matter how good of a blocker they are. Time on task matters for young athletes in the college football ranks, and throw them out there, throw them into the fire, trial and error. Let's see how it goes. Now, the next couple weeks for the Wolverines, perhaps they will be closer games than we may predict against Rutgers and against Nebraska. But conventional wisdom would say these could be 2 weeks that you could work some of these guys in a little more and see what they got and develop a little more trust in them before two pivotal games, and one we really didn't think would be a pivotal game before the season against a now 7-1 Illinois team before Michigan heads to Columbus. So that tail end of the schedule for Michigan right now is looking pretty brutal, but got to figure some things out in the next couple weeks, whether it's a red zone perspective, whether it is a rotation at receiver perspective, whether it's figuring out anything else on both sides of the ball. So really got to get after it.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned Rutgers. We'll touch on it real quick here, Trevor. I mean, again, I understand it's going to be in Piscataway. It's going to be a night game, but there's nothing that you really see from Rutgers that you think should give Michigan much of an issue. You take a look at some of the better teams that they've played. You know, they've played Ohio State. Other than that, they haven't really played a big-time schedule. They played Iowa, who they lost 27-10 to earlier this year. Got absolutely the doors blown off of by Ohio State, right? Like, the defense looks pretty good. They've only given up over 400 yards once on the year, but that was to Ohio State, and Ohio State had a ton of success running the football. 7.4 yards a carry in that game. Ohio State didn't even have to throw it much, only 161 yards through the air, so I don't think this is going to be one of those games where Michigan, you know, tries to work on some things through the pass game. They're going to go in, they're going to lean on the Rutgers defense, and they're going to try and blow them out that way. They're going to control the clock. They're going to get defensive stops because, quite honestly, you know, this Rutgers offense, it's been bad. Over 400 yards of offense only once here this year. Came against Wagner in week number two, you know, and there's nothing that they do real well. They average less than 4 yards a carry. Their quarterbacks are abysmal, whether it's Evan Seinman or Noah Vedral. As long as Michigan is able to, you know, get the read option kind of contained, you know, more so than they did last year when Rutgers came to the Big House. There doesn't seem to be too many paths for victory here for Rutgers, especially if Michigan's able to run the ball as effectively as we think they're going to be able to.
Yeah, Rutgers is coming off a loss in Minnesota. 31-0 got shut out. So it's not like they're trending in the right direction like they were a year ago when going into that week four matchup, they were undefeated going against an undefeated Michigan team. So this matchup doesn't have that same mystique about it. The only thing I'll say is I got to give credit to Greg Schiano. This is a way more competitive Rutgers team on a week-to-week basis than that sorry Chris Ash era that existed prior to Schiano. But that's not saying much either, right? So what are we looking at on Saturday night? Well, sure, they'll run the football, but the one counter I would make is look at what happened at the tail end of Michigan's game on Saturday night against Michigan State. They're throwing the ball a bit, and some can say, oh, that's just Harbaugh being Harbaugh, the Harbaugh of old, who would hold bullies accountable, like Pete Carroll when he was at USC, and try to get some more points, put some more points on the scoreboard, run up the score. But I would also contend that it was just merely to work some more kinks out. JJ, like you said, averaged a good amount throwing the ball per throw, but consistently on the year, he hasn't been hitting those 20 yarders down the field. So I still think this would be a good game once the lead's in hand to a certain extent to, open up the floodgates a little bit, let JJ throw, get Andrell out there, get some guys who need some more reps, whether they're blocking reps, whether they're catching reps or anything in between, pass rushing reps. So that's kind of what I'm looking for in this game. I would like to see a little bit of experimentation. I don't mean that in terms of opening up the playbook, but let's see a little more. Let's see some aggression. And I do think we will see some aggression on Saturday, and this team could use it. They need to blow off some steam in the proper way after a game that will be remembered for all the wrong reasons a couple days ago.
Well, I think that's a good point. And one thing I want to see too, Trevor, as we kind of wrap this up, is Jim Harbaugh, you know, has mentioned it today and has talked about that incident kind of being traumatizing. So how does this team respond? You know, I don't know that they'll have Jamon Green here this weekend on Saturday. It sounds like he does have a concussion after being struck with a helmet. So, you know, how does Michigan as a team respond after an incident like this? And that's been the big discussion point here in the last, you know, 48 hours since the game. So that's my, you know, biggest thing as well. Obviously, Michigan is a much better team than Rutgers, but you're on the road, you're going to New Jersey, it's going to be a hostile environment, you know. That's going to be an interesting thing to look for this week, I think.
I agree. And to me, it starts not with Harbaugh. Harbaugh is a proven good leader as a head coach, but I think this starts with team leadership. And I think Michigan has it. I don't think they're a thin-skinned team. I think they're a thick-skinned team, perhaps more metal than last year. Blake Corum, I think he is a mentally tough guy, and he's going to rally the troops. I think guys like Mike Morris, who have already developed into big-time leaders, will be able to do that. Guys like Mike Sanders still, who always have a serious demeanor. J.J. McCarthy, I think he is starting to become that dude too, even at the post-game press conference when J.J. said him and Corum were sitting next to each other, so they didn't know what happened yet. But J.J. was serious. He wasn't smiling after a victory. And that's good to see. It's good to see J.J. be loose and smile, but he's developing more into a man before our very eyes. So I think Michigan, they're good. They'll be good to go. They're going to be able to rise to the occasion, but it's not going to be easy. And yeah, Harbaugh said it was traumatizing, and I'm sure it is. A guy has a concussion. There is a lawsuit that's going to happen beyond the criminal charges. So there is all this other stuff. And these kids, these young athletes, they have social media. They see what these people are saying online, and it's ugly. It's not everybody supporting them. It's some people trying to throw the blame at them, trying to throw the blame at their head coach. So they're going to be tested in more ways than one. But I think after Saturday night, after that game, we'll be saying how mentally tough this team is.
I agree. Looking forward to Saturday night. Looking forward to just getting past this week, man. 2 weeks, both teams on a bye between Michigan and Michigan State. I never want to see it again. Never want to go through 2 weeks of this rivalry, because it's not even, you know, it's not like the Michigan-Ohio State rivalry. It's all toxic. We saw it boil over after the game at the Big House, just ready to be done with it for another 365. And hopefully both teams next year have a game prior to the week prior going into the Michigan-Michigan State game. So as we wrap up here, Trevor, where can we find you on social media, my man?
Follow me on at Woods Football.
At Woods Football. You can find me at Luke Ghiardi, LukeGhiardi. Please subscribe, rate, and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. We do appreciate the feedback, of course. And, you know, we're looking forward to another great week of Michigan football as we hit the final stretch last month of the regular season. Don't forget to follow the Maize and Brew Twitter page as well, at Maize and Brew. For my partner, Trevor Woods, I'm Luke Ghiardi, and we'll see you next week on Brewcast.